Hello, ladies. Welcome to Women Words Wisdom, which is a podcast for women over 50 who want to challenge cultural narratives surrounding aging. Let's recognize and celebrate the raw truth behind what we wise women are learning and experiencing. My name is Robin Enright Salcedo, and I'm your host for the podcast. I believe we have a choice in how we face our aging. We can look at it with dread, or we can look at it with curiosity. If you believe that 60 is the new 40, this isn't the right podcast for you. Let's face this head on, and let's talk about the real issues. Let's find a way through it together. In 2010, I began what I thought at the time was my greatest life adventure, a move from Massachusetts to Boulder, Colorado at the age of 51. I loaded up my Subaru, bought my cockapoo, Tigger, a booster seat so he could see out the window, and I pointed my car west to begin my new life. While this was indeed a great life adventure, I've realized that the greatest adventure of my life was something I missed beginning altogether. My journey into older age and the many new doors that opened and new chapters that began. And while my drive to Colorado was meticulously mapped out, this adventure has not been. I'm a storyteller who uses the written word and photography to provide a glimpse of my subjects, so why not create a project that focuses on all the ways we end and begin again during this life phase? So I'm curious, who are you? What are you working on? Who and what inspires you? What royally pisses you off? What new chapters have you begun? I promise to be real with you. No bullshit. It's kind of scary, to be honest, but since I've always made sense of the universe through writing and allowing myself to be vulnerable, I guess I'm willing to risk it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Women Words Wisdom Conversations, unedited episodes that feature interviews with women I consider fascinating and inspiring, and who I think are women you just need to know about. Today, I am super excited to be chatting with Boulder, Colorado's Amy Clay, who creates art that speaks to my soul. I first met Amy at an open studios in the fall of 2019, just a few weeks or so before she was to leave for a year's worth of artist in residencies. In Amy's words, it always starts with the longing. An invisible tether pulls me toward the horizon in life and art. My paintings are evidence of the journey, gestural maps of my wanderings. Each stroke is a bushwhack. Each moment in the studio, some kind of a discovery. My restlessness propels me into the world, my travels only create more wanderlust, and my curiosity for the great mishmash of life on this planet is never satiated. Art and travel are in my bones. Amy's favorite thing is to combine art and travel, living as an artist in residence around the world. To date, she has been to over 20 residencies in 14 different countries, such as Iceland, Mexico, Turkey, and Ireland. You can read about her art travels on her blog at amyclayart.com, where she also chronicles her creative process. In addition, Amy offers a downloadable course on her website for those that are curious about applying to artist in residencies. And finally, you can also receive a free download of her book, The Far Shores of Being, that chronicles her first 2 years of artist in residencies if you sign up for her newsletter. Amy and I have a lot to cover today. I'm so excited to be welcoming you. But we are going to be talking today about everything from your creative journey, your creative process, your artist in residencies, especially what happened this year with those artist in residencies. And I do also want to touch upon the emotions that surround your art. So for everyone who's listening, be prepared. You're in for quite a wonderful journey. So Amy, your creative journey, I know you began as a fashion designer. I know you've taken a year-long bike ride, and that I think it was 2009 that you did your first artist in residency.
Yes. I have traveled many times in the past, but in 2009, I was divorced and my son went off. So I was suddenly free after, you know, living a very domestic life for almost 20 years. And I was thinking of different ways that I could travel and combine art. And I had heard about residencies. I'd never been on one. I'd never applied, but I kind of whetted my appetite by Googling and researching and sort of banking a lot of these potential experiences. And then when the time came, it seemed like, well, it's time to kind of let go of my house and my car and my overhead and do a year of back-to-back residencies so that once I was already, say, in Europe, you know, I could take advantage of already being there and go from one to the next to the next. And it actually wound up turning into like off and on about 4 years before I came back to Boulder and, you know, got a place to live and a studio in Boulder again. So I got hooked pretty quickly.
I think it's fascinating, and I think it says a lot about who you are as a person, and I don't know you well, that instead of starting off and dipping your toe in for one little artist in residency, you just jumped in for an entire year. And I love that. I mean, how are you able to do that? Weren't you terrified?
No, actually. I mean, I've done it a few times in the past, kind of just taken the big leap. For example, you mentioned I was a fashion designer. I was living in New York City in my 20s. And I was kind of climbing the ladder in terms of being a designer. And I realized that it really was not the life for me. So I just sold all of my things and I had a one-way ticket to Australia. And that initiated a journey that took about another year and a half. Including that bicycle ride around the world that we talked about, that you had mentioned before. So, you know, I've had moments where it's like only something radical would do. I had to change everything. It wasn't going to be an incremental kind of, like you said, toe in the water change. It was basically letting go of the shore. So that's why I often use the metaphor of, you know, the horizon, like the name of the book that I wrote about my residencies, The Far Shores of Being. It's you know, it's one thing to kind of get in a little rowboat and swish around, you know. It's another thing to see the horizon and know that that's your destiny or that's your path. So, yeah, I mean, it's not like the first time that I did it, but it was certainly the first time I did it as a traveling artist. Most of the places, I didn't know much about them at all. And, you know, I was in for quite a few surprises and adventures and experiences, the occasional disaster. But that was, I actually just wrote about that on my blog. But
I saw that one. I saw that one, and I'm going to redirect everyone there at the end. Amy's blog, which I want to get into in a second, is she's not only an incredible artist, but the way she's able to articulate how she is experiencing her art and what is happening. She's a writer. I mean, you're a writer as well, clearly. Did you ever in that year? So obviously, the disasters for the first year weren't enough to push you away for the next one. I am curious, did you ever have a moment during that first year or moments? I mean, there has to have been something that made you have times where you were like, I can't do this. Or maybe your language is more like, oh goodness, you know? did you have any of those moments? And if so, what were they? What did they revolve around?
I never questioned that I would follow through with that first year, but I definitely had moments of panic. Mm-hmm. And actually panic is a little bit of a strong term. I only really felt panic that one time that I just mentioned, the disaster, because I was really stuck in a place, and you know, I don't have unlimited funds. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you have a gap, so say you're in Spain 1 month and you're going to be in Portugal in 2 months, you've got that gap in between. Like, I can't pay for a hotel for a month if something goes wrong, you know?
Right.
So usually it would be a financial anxiety more than anything. I always know that I can land on my feet. And that comes from a lot of travel and a lot of not just sort of like sitting on the beach in Mexico, but a lot of travel that, so even solo travel, like through Southeast Asia and things like that. So every time you do that, you build that or you strengthen that muscle of trusting yourself that next time, you know, you trust that you'll be able to get through it. You know,
it's a fascinating thing. You must be one of the most well-equipped people to be dealing with this time period in our lives, but because it is true, the more you just jump off a cliff or leave yourself untethered. I think you use that word a couple times. I think I've seen it on your blog, and I love that term because for many of us, the idea of being untethered is terrifying. But as you said, you build those muscles that remind you, even though you might be frightened in a particular moment, you will get through it because you've done it before.
Yeah. The other thing is that I'm really not very attached to things. Mm-hmm. So when I went off the first time, you know, people said, oh, you must be so brave. I couldn't leave my house or this or that. And I understand that. Mm-hmm. But my perspective has always been, you know, what am I married to? Mm-hmm. Am I married to my freedom or am I married to my security and my things? And it's not to say what that should be for anybody else, but for me, I'm if I'm married to anything or tethered to anything, it's freedom. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my MO, and it makes it a lot easier to be fluid in terms of what's, you know, what's in front of me. I show up someplace like, oh, this is interesting.
That,
instead of, oh my God, I wish I was home in my bed, in my own bed with my own sheets. You
know, that a lot of people end up feeling. It's funny because you said something, I was going to say, talk about this a little later, but I think it's the perfect time now. When I asked you, I don't even remember what my question was when we did a pre-interview or a pre-chat, and you said something about that you were doing what you wanted to do. And sometimes when you know, if you're conversing with someone else about how you're living your life, you said something that I think is, I'm paraphrasing, but that you have to want it enough and you have to want more than just the idea of it. Does that sound more, I wrote it down because I was so.
I love how you said that. I think you made it even better. Yeah, because of course, in anything in life, there's the idea of it and then there's the reality of it. And we can all fantasize about, you know, this sort of glamorous or, you know, adventurous life that's full of wonders and all that. And that's a part of it. But it's not that. It's really about going to or wanting to be in the world in a way with that. Okay, now I'm having trouble articulating, but wanting to go into the world with a sense of curiosity and openness and acceptance of, you know, all of the ways that things show up. Mm-hmm. So, so I do think that in terms of someone who may be interested in the kind of lifestyle that I have, it's not for the armchair traveler. It's not for the person who, you know, just wants a Instagram photo op. Mm-hmm. It's really about, going deeper into life's experience.
Yeah. And it sounds like, I mean, everything that you're saying, obviously there's that curiosity and that drive, but then there's that also, it sounds like the mentality of flinging yourself open-armed into the direction that you're going, and understanding that you can't control everything that's going to happen to you. In fact, that's, you know, it kind of brings me to another point about really talking about the art that you create. And I want you to talk to this, but one of the things that in that video that I was looking at and on your website is you say that you use some, you use found objects. So I know you travel with your paints and the things that you most need, but it's one thing to just paint a horizon. You don't do that, in my opinion. I'm not an art critic. Mm-hmm. You make your work, the reason I love it, makes me feel a place. It makes me, I may not even know where you are, but I feel it. It's something that you can't really articulate, which is why I'm doing such a lovely job right now. But, you know, I know you use acrylics and oils and collage and photo transfers. So tell our listeners a little bit more about how do you decide what you're going to use? And tell us about your art, how you create art a little bit, is I guess what I'm asking you.
Well, first of all, thank you for saying that, you know, my work creates a feeling in you of a sense of place, but not a literal place. I mean, that's very much what I'm going for, mm-hmm. because I'm trying to, in the moment, respond to the world around me. But at the same time, you know, there's a very much an intuitive, personal experience. Mm-hmm. So, and I was at one residency actually down in Provence, which is this very kind of unusual place. But there was an open studios and some people came in and they were looking at what I was working on. And one of them said, "You're telling us or you're showing us that there's more than what we see." Mm-hmm. And that was like one of the most beautiful things that someone had said to me, because, you know, I'm not trying to do anything, but I'm just wanting to respond and be authentic at the same mm-hmm. time. So I'm responding to the world around me, and then I'm coming from a very grounded, universal place that isn't about my immediate surroundings. So that's kind of the you know, overall gist of things. In terms of my materials, I use mostly acrylic. I've painted in encaustic. For 10 years, I painted with encaustic and oil. It's a beautiful medium, but it's really not applicable to traveling. At least that's mm-hmm. my experience. So, and I found that with acrylic, I can, but through the layering process and building up texture and stuff, mm-hmm. I can get that kind of, I mean, people can't even tell the difference between my
yeah.
encaustic.
Uh-huh.
It's good because acrylic can sometimes be very flat. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I use imagery if I'm really, if it's calling for that. Often it's trees. I take pictures of trees almost everywhere I go because I adore them, especially the bare bones of trees. So, you know, in the winter when there's this sort of graphic form with lines and branches and all those kinds of things. And then I do some drawing, some writing, some, you know, where I actually just do a gestural sort of writing into the paintings. So that's kind of almost makes it feel like a journal to me, even though it's not meant to be read. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like the technical things. In terms of found objects, I don't work that much with found objects unless I'm in a place, for example, when I was in the southern Spain at a residency. And, you know, when I go there typically for a month, the first thing I do is go for walks and, you know, look around at whatever is around me. And there were these, it was kind of a funky little town, and there were all these actually burnt out. I think they'd had a bad fire some years before, but kind of like ruins around. Mm-hmm. And I would just find these, you know, bits and bobs of rusted metal and things like that. And they ended up being in my paintings. I also worked on cardboard because, you know, it's kind of a pain to schlep a lot of, whether it's canvas or panels or paper. So I'd find old cardboard boxes and gesso them and start, you know, breaking them down and using that as a surface with the found objects, the metal things. One other place I used found objects was in Turkey, where I really struggled with responding to this incredible country that was so visually stimulating. Mm-hmm. And I really, for most of that month, I had a hard time. I don't really think of myself as being blocked, because I know how to get through a block. You just simply start making marks. Mm-hmm. But whatever I was doing wasn't inspiring me. It just was flat. Mm-hmm. And I found an old damaged kiln in like a cave and thought, well, I love textiles. I'm going to start. So I started to take it apart. It was already damaged. So I didn't, you know, didn't feel too sacrilegious. And I created these collages out of these kiln pieces. Yeah.
So it sounds, what I love hearing when you talk, first of all, you're making me just want to go create art. But I think one of the reasons for that is in the way you are able to describe your process is, and correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you don't start, you don't approach a canvas or whatever you're using aware of what the outcome will be. It's that curiosity, I think, that you talk about. So maybe you have a color. I mean, I don't know, but it sounds that you are very gifted at being able to just not listen to that voice that says, well, you should put this here and it should look like that. You really are in the moment.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of voices that are constantly chattering around in the background. So, you know, the thing, and this is what I teach in my classes too, is to be able to discern, because there's a voice that is an impulse. Mm-hmm. And that impulse is usually the truth. And then there's the critic and the this and the shoulds and the blah, blah, blah. And, oh, people like this color. No, you know, those kinds of external voices that really, they're not very helpful. Mm-hmm. So to be able to quiet it enough to allow that internal voice, that intuitive voice that says, okay, make a red mark. Well, I don't know. Why use it? Should I use red paint? Well, I don't know. You know, what about blue? Or what, you know, those, when you start overriding or not trusting those impulses, that's when you get into trouble. Mm-hmm. So I just allow, I try to just allow the authentic mark to present itself, however that is.
I think that's, it's, you know, I am certainly, I don't consider myself a painter, but I love paint. Mm-hmm. And I think I may have even told you this previously, but I took an art class with Jenny Doe last summer. And what we did was, I think she called it expressive painting. And it was layering a canvas with acrylics, all acrylics. And that part was a blast because you're just making marks all over that canvas. And then looking at the canvas and seeing what it is that should become, which for me, and again, it's what I do, you know, like how I soothe myself when I am a little bit stuck on photography or writing, or especially the writing, because I know that if I just don't think about the writing and I work on something else, it will all come. But yeah. This painting form is, it's very much like what you're talking about that you're so talented at, is it's following the impulses. It's saying, oh, I see an eye there. So I paint all these creatures. They don't exist. There's no such thing. And I don't know, I don't have any idea why I'm doing what I'm doing until it's done. And then I say, aha, yeah. That's, you were thinking about something, girl, and it's coming through here. But you don't, I think that's something about, at least from my experience with art forms, is forcing something is often the very worst thing that you can do.
Yeah. I mean, the forcing, or the flip side of the forcing is the discipline. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, sometimes I have to put myself into a headlock to get in front of the paper. And it's not because I'm stuck necessarily, it's just that I'm being lazy, or, you know, don't feel like doing it right now. And that could kind of be one day to the next, to the next, to the next, a month could go by. Yeah. So that's when the forcing and the disciplining of your sitting down in front of it is an important part of it. Even if you make a mark that's, you know, aggressive, or, you know, timid, or expansive, or contracting, it doesn't really matter what the mark is. It's if you're engaging. Mm-hmm. because I mean, the way that I paint is, I couldn't do this with, say, watercolors, for example, because you have to anticipate your whites when you're doing watercolor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But with acrylic, you can always add white back in. You can always just paint right over with gesso and start again. Mm-hmm. So there's really no wrong mark that you can make. And that's what I love about that medium so much. And it dries quickly. So really, there's no reason to be afraid when you start making marks. And once you begin to learn with any medium how it works, then, you know, you begin to go, oh, well, okay, I just made a big old mess, which I do every single time I make a painting. I almost start with a mess, like, okay, let's just get it over with, you know. And then all these cool things show up, like the way that it drips or the way that, you know, this sort of scraped across in this part. Like I don't think there's a single painting I've ever done that I could actually have an idea and then do it. It's all in that, you know, exploration of what's going to happen when I do this. I've said this many times before, but Robert Rauschenberg is one of my big painting heroes. He said, I've got to remember what the quote was. He said, I look for maximum lack of control so the paint will do something that I didn't think of.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
Like that's the kind of painting that I do, or I you know, strive to do, is when I'm letting go of control completely. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there are moments of like, oh yeah, now this can happen, and maybe I'll bring in an image, but it's always a one foot in front of the other thing. It's never like I'm in A and I want to get to Z and now I have to go through all those steps. So each another class that I taught, and sort of expression I like to use, it's very Taoist, but the way leads to the way. So, you know, not to start out with this destination of mind, and only you will only get there by taking one step, which then informs the next step, which then informs the next step, and so on.
So that's where the commitment and discipline can come in. So it's not so much the structure of the art itself, it's the structure of doing this as a life. I mean, this is your life. How much do you, what is your day like? Do you get up and jump into the studio? Are you a morning? Are you an evening? Like, do you have hours that you set for yourself? Or
Well, you know, it depends. Like, for example, right now we're going into summer and it's so hot. So the first thing I do is, you know, get up at breakfast and go for a ride or a hike or something before mm-hmm. it gets hot. But I would say I put it, you know, it depends on the day, but I'd say I put really only 2 to 4 hours of actual painting time a day. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the time is, you know, my blogging, my newsletter, marketing, you know, social media stuff, which I don't spend a lot of time on. And, you know, any maybe artist residency applications. I'm new to grant writing. So, you know, I want to sort of give myself some time to do grants. But it's not like I spent 8 hours in the studio actually painting.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something that people, I remember when I first met my husband, he's an engineer, and I had kind of taken a hiatus from writing for a while for a variety of reasons. And I was trying so hard to just get back into that discipline, that time, you know, sitting down, because I knew that if I just did even 20 minutes every morning, before I knew it, I would be actually really writing again. But one of the things, at least for me, that I realized, and maybe it happens to you on your workouts, is I also need, even if I write maybe 2 hours a day, I need empty space, like the space where there's nothing happening, but there's so much actually happening in my brain. And it's the most fascinating thing. And it's very hard to explain that to somebody who's used to a 9-to-5 job where they are structured in their chair, because well into the pretty recent past to figure out how to do it and not feel like I'm just wasting time, knowing that there is something happening. It's just not coming out on a page, whether it or a photograph or whatever it is I'm doing. There is something happening. It's just happening in the back here, you know.
Well, it's like the fallow field, you know. I mean, we can't be cranking out 24/7. We need that kind of germinating. And before I went on my first year of residencies, I was living in Boulder on up by the lake here. I'd rented a little cottage on there, and I had just gotten divorced and, you know, hadn't decided what I was going to do yet. But I basically looked out the window for 4 months straight at the lake and watched the season. Well, actually, it was more than 4 months. It was a year. But, you know, I was so captivated by the beauty of nature in front of me. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm not doing anything. You know, what's going on? And out of that dreaming place came this idea to do the residency for the first year. And, you know, when you don't see the results of this kind of spaciousness that you're talking about, you can feel like it's just a waste of time. But I would agree. I think that we don't force the plant to grow when all this activity is happening underground. We don't see it. And we don't go, come on, you know, get to work here.
It's like trying to get a 2-year-old to move. If you do that, it's like going to be a little bit more and more resistant. No. It's like, it sounds like you're what we're talking a lot about too. Once you are in front of your, you know, standing there with your paints, or me with my writing, there's one of the most beautiful things I try to explain to people who aren't artists is, everybody calls it something different. Some people call it flow. Some people call it, I feel like I'm being channeled. I don't feel, and it's not like I sit down and say, okay, come to me. It's kind of a little bit going back to, it's like what Elizabeth Gilbert talks about in Big Magic. It'll start. And then before I know it, time will pass and I have no idea that the time has just passed. Mm-hmm. And that to me is grace. It's awe, it's spiritual. And even if what I'm creating, I may not end up being madly in love with, that the very ability to be in that space, I consider one of the most beautiful things art brings to me.
And that, you know, that's the high that we're going for,
right?
As creatives, you know, it's the drug. And then there's all of the other time. So, you know, those moments for me are, you know, it's not that often that I am really in that timeless space. And that's because, you know, my mind is so overactive that, you know, I don't always have the ability to get into flow. But like Chuck Close, the artist, said, you know, I'm just about to tell these quotes and then they fly out of my head. But he said, you know, something like 5%, you know, we've heard that thing, 5% inspiration, 95% perspiration. But he said, you know, if you wait for inspiration, you will, you know, it's like, no, that's for amateurs. The rest of us get to work.
Right.
So yes, we all want that place where we're in the flow, but we can't be waiting for it or expecting it that that's how it's always going to be. And I was remembering so many times, this happened actually just recently when I did I was at a residency in Spain, and we have a show coming up. So there's a lot of pressure. And we had 3 weeks to do, you know, a bunch of work for the show. And I was like, come on, you're not doing, you know, get to work. And I put the work up on the walls after the 3 weeks. And I was like, how did that happen? I don't even know. This has happened so many times. I think, you know, so much of my work actually is almost in spite of myself. Mm-hmm. It's like, I sometimes say, oh, you're so productive. I don't feel productive. You know, I feel like I'm never doing enough. And that, you know, I'm being lazy and I'm, you know, sort of floating around. And then all of a sudden I look at heaps of of paintings. I do open studios. It's like, where did all of this stuff come from? So there's both of that, like that, what you're talking about is that pinnacle when we are truly in that zone. Mm-hmm. And it is, you know, it's all those things that you say. And then, you know, 95% of the rest of the time is just showing up and recognizing that you're going to get in your own way constantly, but continuing on.
I think that's, because I want to segue into your artist in residencies and in particular your experience this year, but what it's making me think about is how, that's why it's so valuable to be maybe not always 24/7 by any means surrounded by other artists, but to have a fair amount of artists in your circle, because, you know, even for me, I'm talking to someone like yourself, I walk away and I think, I'm just feeling invigorated again. And someone, you know, my husband is incredibly supportive, you know, is, you know, applauding from the background, but art isn't, you know, it's just not what he does. So when you're reminded by a peer or someone that you emulate, that there will be so many, because like you, I have many, many moments where I'm thinking, I've just got this. Who do you think you are, girl? Right. There's people who have been, especially, I mean, I started photography at the age of 59. So just 2 years, there are such talented photographers out there. They've been doing it all their lives. And yeah, that can be very intimidating. But for me, I just keep going because there's no alternative, actually, you know? So I think when you're around other artists, and you have the opportunity to talk to them, and you find everybody is, you know, thinking is the same way, and in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and you know, I definitely up my game when I am with other artists, whether it's at a residency or, well, I mean, that's typically when I'm actually painting. Not necessarily side by side, but, you know, where I'm interacting with other artists on a daily basis. So that's, you know, it's definitely inspiring. It's sometimes, you know, you can have moments of they're playing their music too loud or, you know, that type of thing, although it's not that common. But I've also learned a lot. Like, you know, I guess I have this free rein to talk about my residency experiences here. But like, for example, when I was at one in Berlin, everybody was really young. And, you know, at that time I was 49 and, you know, old enough to be everybody's mother. They were all like in their 20s, which is great. I mean, the thing about being an artist and being an artist in residence is that really age is not a factor. And that's a whole other thing that's actually really cool. Like, art is a common language. It transcends, you know, culture, race, age, language. It is the sort of common denominator that I love so much. That's one thing I love about this global community of artists that I've met over the years. So I, like, when I was in Berlin, I had this idea that I wanted to learn how to do hand-painted animations, which I have a couple on my little video on my website. And, you know, they were much more techie than I was. They kind of helped me get this sense of it. You know, we kind of piecemealed it, almost duct taped it together, you know. But that helped. And every artist that I've met along the way has influenced me in some way, big or little. So, yes, I think, and typically when I'm home in Boulder, even though I have a lot of artist friends, we're all in our own space, doing our own thing until we come together for an opening or show or, you know, whatever, some kind of gathering around art. But it's not like I'm painting with my other artist friends mm-hmm. on a regular basis.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, you know, when I'm working on photography, actually, the last thing I'd want to do is be side by side with another photographer. What I love is being able to sit down with somebody, and, you know, my friends tend to be more landscape. I'm more into portraits, although I do some landscape, and to be able to just chat about what that process was like and what we're thinking. And yeah, and that's that to me. I've done one artist in residency. Unlike you, I dipped my toe and it actually just fell in my And it was fantastic. And it's something I am going to download your course, because I don't want to do a year, but I do, I want to find other residencies. And I'd love to hear you, well, first of all, I want to hear you talk about a little bit about how you choose them or what pulls you to them. I'd love to hear, there's three parts to this question, you know, what would bring you to an artist in residency, and where you were planning to go this year, and where you missed, and what's next for you in that realm of this year, unfortunately, with the pandemic getting right in the way.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing I do talk about on my blog is how things can go awry. Mm-hmm. And it started, November 1st of 2019 was when I started my year. And my idea was I was just going to rent my loft for a year. And, you know, that would partially fund this residency, because funds is a whole other thing. I think a lot of people think I have, you know, like a trust fund or rich ex-husband or something, which is not the case. You know, so I am very conscious of the financial things. But for example, November, December of last year, 2019, I did a residency in Newfoundland. And I'm very drawn to the north. I've lived off and on in the UK for over 4 years, married an Englishman at one point, have family there. I love dark and dank. I'm totally in a minority here, and that's just fine. But when I went there, there were a few things. It was a relatively new renovation, the building I was in. And so then there were some permit issues, whatever. And he, after about a month or so, he had to kind of temporarily shut it down. So that changed what was going to be about 6 weeks. And then my mother got very ill. So I had to cut that short. After I was there about 5 weeks overall, I think it was going to be 7 weeks total. So it wasn't a big deal, but you know, things in the life happens. And, then after starting in January, I went back to the UK. I was down in Cornwall doing a self-residency, if you can call it that, where basically you just say, okay, I want to go to this place, mm-hmm. find a good deal with the Airbnb, and, you know, put some plastic on a table and just do, you know, mm-hmm. something pretty simple. But if the point is to be inspired by a new environment and landscape and people and whatever. February, I had a residency set up in Rota, Spain. Which is the one I mentioned where I had the show that, you know, I was like, where did all this work come from? And, you know, each one is so different. So for example, when I was there, it was just myself and a young 24-year-old American guy. We became really good buds, you know? So you just never know what the demographic is going to be, or, you know, it could be someone from Brazil or from China or whatever. I mean, it's always a very eclectic mix of people. Prior to the COVID thing happening, so I had Spain in February and then a different residency in Spain in March, and then a residency in Portugal for April. I mention that because, you know, I try to line them up so I don't have to do too much travel. I'm going to be flying all over the place. Well, the middle residency in Spain got canceled suddenly. It was not due to COVID. And I was already on the road. And I was like, well, I've got Spain, and then I've got Portugal, and I've got a month in between. What am I going to do? You know, like I said, I can't necessarily just pay for a hotel for a month while I hang out and wait for the next residency to happen. Well, while I was in Newfoundland, there was a father and daughter, wonderful people, I absolutely adore them, who are from Northern Ireland. And he said, oh, I have an extra cottage. I live in Ballygally, right on the sea. And I have an extra cottage, and you're welcome to have that for the month of March. So I was like, okay, well, that's cool. And I really liked him and his work, and his daughter became a good friend too. And so that's what I did. I went from Spain. I did a quick little trip down to Morocco for a week, which I'd always wanted to do. And that is a whole other thing. Got to Northern Ireland. Absolutely loved it. And then COVID hit. So I really was very happy there. I had a wonderful studio space. But it became really apparent that travel was going to be the problem. I wasn't concerned about the other things. It was more about getting back if, you know, if that needed to happen. So I was there for about 2.5 weeks, and then I decided, I booked the trip. And when I flew out of Dublin, through United, because I use miles, I'm always jonesing for miles, you know, like however I can get miles to go anywhere. And so when I got to the airport in Dublin, they said, well, it's a good thing that you're flying out now, because in 2 days, United has canceled all flights out of Dublin.
Oh, my.
So I, you know, made the right choice.
Right.
April, I was supposed to be in Portugal. This past May, I would have been in Finland. This month, I would be in the UK, and on and on. So, yeah, I was very disappointed to have to cancel those future residencies. But, you know, they're postponed, and they'll happen again.
So how do you, I mean, so clearly you are a wandering soul, in all the best possible ways you can, because I think, you know, one of the things I was thinking as you were talking is it's not just that you're not attached to things, which I think is critical if you're going to explore that lifestyle, but you're able to know in some part of yourself, it sounds like, that your friends are going to be left behind, but that's okay because you're going to make new friends, or you trust that you will find, whether you want to call it a community or a confidant or, for, you know, but because we do need people, even after we're you know, just want to be alone to create our art, we still want to at some point interact with people. So how are you, how does this affect, you know, I know you kind of, you know, you're very structured in how you work. Is it, do you find it frustrating from the perspective of art to not have, I mean, are you able to, in your familiar surroundings, to still find that creative soul, that creative juice?
You mean when I'm home?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's easier in some ways when I'm home because I have my supplies.
Yeah.
You know, when you're on the road, and I mean, my heaviest thing, I envy writers so much. Because my supplies are, and I don't bring a lot, but they're heavy and bulky and it's kind of a pain in the neck. So, you know, I have basic supplies with me. Mm-hmm. But when I'm home, I've got, you know, all of my materials. Mm-hmm. So it actually is definitely, it's as inspiring to be home as it is to be away, but for different reasons.
You find, because one of the things when we were in lockdown here, when it all started, I started just looking around my house and seeing things in a different way. And I don't like the idea that we were forced into staying in our familiar spaces. I think it's just, you know, what's happened to our world, to the climate of human beings. Between the illness and death and fear and all of those things is not something I would like to have come back, for sure. But for me, I learned a lot about myself and how I work because I was forced to stay in one place. And I started seeing things differently. And it's almost like when, you know, I don't know how it is for a painter, but as a photographer, you know, you're always looking through a viewfinder. It's a moment to be where you focus, you're deciding what to focus on. That's kind of what it did for me, is it really narrowed that focus and forced me to consider, okay, you still write, you still shoot. How are you going to continue to do that? So does that, for you, do you draw upon your past experiences or do you even know, or do you stay, Do you see things in your current environment that inspire, maybe that's not the right word, that drive you towards a creation? Do you have an idea how that works for you?
Well, just to sort of comment on the COVID, you know, the virus and how the lockdown and how that affected a lot of things. It really wasn't that different for me. Because I actually spend a lot of time on my own and I love it. Mm-hmm. It's actually, as much time as I spend on my own, I never have enough time on my own. Mm-hmm. So you know, I have so many projects that I want to do. It actually was quite helpful in a lot of ways because I do have a social life. I do have friends. Like you say, you know, I need people in my life. I enjoy my friendships and doing things. But it's actually kind of been good in that I don't have, you know, as much of a social life in the evening. And so I've actually really enjoyed that. So that kind of just touching on the COVID thing and how it affected, although I must say that it took me a long time to start working again. I was very distracted, like most of us in terms of the news. And I think, you know, distractions in general, like I find social media really distracting. Instagram I love because it's just, it's a visual feed.
Right.
Facebook, I really, I struggle with because I just, not only if I don't go on very often and just sort of browse or scroll, I go on usually if I post something, but then you're like, well, you want to respond to people if they've commented on that kind of thing. So distractions, like you were saying, you were very focused, you know, you began to see things with maybe fresh eyes or something. I don't know, honestly, if I did that so much as just struggled with staying away from the news and everything else, you know. So I don't know if that actually answered your question.
It actually does. And I think you bring up something that, you know, I'm with you. I mean, you just took all the words out of my mouth. I love Instagram. I struggle with Facebook. And that's another conversation for probably another day. But what I really appreciate that you bringing up is I was the same way. My creativity just took a little bit of a, it just disappeared for a little while. And I know that it was because of the news and the noise. And even if I shut that out, it was there. I mean, it was terrifying. It was there. We didn't know what was happening. And I don't want to say I gave into it, but I think surrender is the right word. And there were a few days where I was like, I can't do anything. I just can't. I can't do anything. And I'm going to binge watch Netflix. It didn't happen very often. But creativity, that's something that I think, you know, I hope people, this is a hard time. This isn't the time to suddenly sit down and say, I'm going to learn to paint. I mean, you can paint, but are all of us that haven't already had a discipline in place, it's very challenging. And I would hate to see anyone feel disappointed in their own output. So one of the things I think this is probably a good time for us to conclude this talk. I have a funny feeling I'm going to want you to come back again because there's some things I didn't ask you that I really wanted to ask you. But I get to still talk to you after this. Where can we find you next? I mean, the world is uncertain. I know I want to encourage everybody to please visit Amy's website at amyclayart.com.
amyclay.com.
Oh, I'm so sorry. amyclay.com.
On Instagram, sorry to interrupt you. On Instagram, it's at amyclayart, but my website is just amyclay.com.
Thank you. Sorry about that. And everybody, please hear that correction. It's just amyclay.art. And .com. Oh, gosh.
That's okay. This is...
Yes, okay. And this will be in the summary as well. So people who pop on here will be able to say that. But check out her art. I have to say, I was on there. I was like, oh, I kept looking at ones. I was like, I want to buy that. Sold. I want to buy that. It's sold. So that's wonderful. That makes me really happy for you. But also as a reminder, if you were inspired by this conversation to explore your own artist in residencies, download Amy's course on artist in residencies. She gives a lot of information about what she covers in that course. And definitely sign up for her mailing list so that you can get that ebook, The Far Shores of Being, which is a journey through her first 2 years of artist in residencies. Is there any place else that we should look for you in the near future, Amy?
Well, right now I'm back in Boulder, Colorado, where I live. And because of all the travel restrictions and everything, I've just put everything on hold. However, I do have a residency that I am signed up for. It's actually going to be almost 3 months, and it's outside of Sydney in Australia.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm really excited. It's right on the edge of the national forest, which was spared by the fires that happened several months ago. And that would be October through December. Mm-hmm. And I actually did book a flight. Of course, these days, which is so great, you can cancel them if they don't.
Yeah.
But at this point, I'm planning on going if there's any way possible. And that would be October. And then what I'd like to do, because I had, you know, the 6 months essentially where I was, when I had to come back, it got interrupted in that full year. So now I have 6 months more out of that year that I originally wanted to take. And so it would be the 3 months in Australia, and then January, February, March, I might try to do some of those residencies I had booked before. You know, this is all assuming that we can travel again.
Right. Well, I will keep my fingers crossed for you. And I assume if we're signed up for your newsletter, if you do, when this times return a little bit to normal, if you have showings or open studios or any of that, we would be notified in that way.
Yeah. And I send out on my, if you sign up for my newsletter, I send out one about once a month. Mm-hmm. And usually what I do is profile my blog posts. So if, you know, you weren't checking on my website constantly, you wouldn't necessarily know that I post. So once a month you'll get kind of a recap on those blog posts. And then if there's any news, I'm hoping to have a kind of show/sale in September in Boulder. We'll see again, you know, there's so many things we don't know about yet, but I certainly, if you're signed up for it, you would know about that.
Well, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for that too. Amy, it is a pleasure talking to you. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And I'm hoping, I know you're not in Boulder a lot, but I'm hoping that I get to connect with you in person someday soon. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And thank you for having me. It's really, really fun to share some of this with you and with your listeners.
Thank you.